The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
We lose Twitter followers all the time.
Yeah, but I only had 435.
Did you see my post on Facebook?
It's kind of obvious. It's like, hey, oh my God, I lost someone.
Yeah. Did you see my post on Facebook about the news feed?
Yeah.
I change it. They keep changing it to top stories.
They want you to buy the thing.
And I keep changing it to most recent. And then I sent them a screen capture.
Yeah.
And I said, stop doing this. I want it. If I want top stories, I'll select top stories. So I go back to my feed. I hit recent stories, right? Then I hit refresh. Top stories. Mm-hmm. For a good hour, it was like that, where every time the feed refreshed, I was at top stories instead of most recent. I was like, oh, I hate Facebook. And I do. I really do. If we didn't have to be on Facebook for this, I would not ever touch it. It would be gone completely. Welcome, everyone. This episode of H2O. My name is Jason Hunt. Sitting across from me, Mr. Timothy Harvey.
Hello. And we're starting off with a rant.
Sure. What we have here. Yes. Because
I like interacting with the people that I care about through Facebook
because it's easy. That's because you like people to start with.
Well, this is true. I do, in fact, like people. Well, this is also true. But that's okay.
Yes.
We put up with you anyway.
As well you should.
He just raised
for
his...
For my
he
ally just shook is his, the force.
He shook his glasses at me. You can't see this stuff, folks.
Mm-hmm.
He's like gesturing and pointing and... we've both been having computer issues.
Maybe we should, things and such, of late. Get me started on our upload issues that we're having on the website.
Yeah, well, upload issues on the website. I'm uploading. In theory, at home, I'm still uploading a clip for a friend building an actor reel, and
I spent 20
hates me
20 minutes on the phone with our server customer, with our hosting company, trying to figure out why all of a sudden, a couple of months ago, we hit this file size limit. All of a sudden, any MP3 that I was trying to upload, any of our podcasts, any of that, suddenly has to be less than 50 megs. Before that, it was fine. I could upload any file, you know, whatever the size was, or whatever, 80 megs, 72 megs, whatever. Can't get anything over 50 megs uploaded now. So I called. We've gone through all of the CSS code. We've gone through all the PHP code. Blaze and I have both looked at this thing backwards and forwards 6 ways from Sunday and can't find anything that would be a limit on our upload file size. So I call him. I said, what is causing this? What's going on? Mm-hmm. And we get through all of this stuff, and it turns out that it was a glitch on the server that allowed us to do it in the first place.
Oh.
Because since we're on a shared server space with other websites,
right,
our upload file size limit is 2 megs. 2 megs.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, okay, even now,
I got photos uploading on the computer,
like,
at home that are bigger than 2 megs.
I was like, 2 megs? Are you really telling me 2 megs? Because we're uploading files that are bigger than that all the time.
Sure.
You know, these podcasts, even though I'm crunching them and condensing them down tiny.
Sure.
You know, fortunately, since we're just talking, you know, we're not losing a whole lot in terms of quality.
Right.
Because we have such great voices anyway, we can afford to lose a little bit of...
And we still sound amazing.
We do. And we sound a little full of ourselves. Dial it up to 11. But yeah, after 20 minutes, it's like, yeah, you're doing something you shouldn't ought to have been doing in the first place. I'm like, okay, how do we get that back? You know, where's that glitch? Put that glitch back in the server. Oh, I tell you. Well, so I at some point, I think we're probably going to end up having to go to a dedicated server in order to be able to do this.
Sure.
But the frustration that I feel, especially given the fact that I'm on a new phone, with a speakerphone. And now, see, this is this. I got a Galaxy 5. I got a Samsung 5. Mm-hmm. I had a 3.
Right.
I had a 3S, Galaxy 3S, or whatever that is. So now I've got a Galaxy 5.
Right.
Because the Galaxy 6 doesn't have an SD card. It's all cloud-based now.
Oh, okay.
So I got the 5 because it's got an SD card. I can pull the SD card out if I need it for storage. The speakerphone in this thing is crap. Hello? Did I lose it? What? Hello? Nobody can hear me.
This will not be used as part of their ad campaign to sell the next phone.
See that itty bitty teeny tiny pinprick hole right there?
Uh-huh.
I think that's the microphone.
Wow.
Yeah. I think. And then of course, all of the cables that I bought to power and charge and whatever on the phone won't fit this one.
Of course not.
Because it's got this little, flexi door on the bottom of it.
Sure.
Which somehow I'm supposed to make sure doesn't go away in the 2 years I'm going to have this thing because it's a lease.
Right. Oh, okay, sure.
So I got to make sure nothing happens to this little cover door, which is just made to break.
Oh, yeah, I can see that from here. In fact, I'm kind of afraid that you're just touching it right now.
I know. I just was right like, off. Good night. This is terrible design.
Now I need to upgrade my phone, but I'm not going to buy that one. Well, I'm pretty sure this is not a good endorsement.
I didn't realize it had this thing on there. And then, since it's not a Galaxy 3S, the OtterBox protective shell that I bought for my phone,
sure,
doesn't fit.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, okay. If we're going to talk about bad design, all right. So this is my phone, which is an LG something or other.
As you can see,
look at envision in your mind a black phone.
It
looks remarkably like everybody else's phone except
you and Maya and Cammy.
Yeah.
I have said from the get-go, you three are our NPR voices.
Yeah. Well.
Because you guys have the NPR tone.
Sure.
So that's how you should talk about your phone.
There we go. You'll notice there is no case on this phone.
Yes, okay? I noticed that.
All right. I have a case for this phone. And it's very nice. It's not very fancy, but it does the job. You know, it protects the phone if I were to drop the phone, because I have been known to drop my phone.
What?
Yeah, I know, it happens. I've never broken a phone by dropping it.
Right.
That's a lie. I'm sorry. I broke one phone by dropping it. But so I have this. I have the
liar. You're fired.
Fine. I'll just leave it. So anyway, so I put the case on. I would go to New York. I'm like, I need to get a case for this thing. I'm going to be traveling, and so I get the case and I put it on here. And you know what it does? It makes the phone heat up.
because there's no heat. And you
look at the phone and you sit there and go, well, wait a minute, that's because there's nowhere for the heat to go.
Oh,
and the it just sits inside that case and it gets warmer and warmer. Mm-hmm. And you know what all cell phones don't like to do when they get really warm? Work.
Now, and I'm like, I do have to say, this one holds a charge much better than the other one.
Yeah.
And I think it's because the other one was getting old and tired, and it was getting worn out. And I fortunately can plug in more than one charger cord to this one. Because that other phone, I could only use one cord. I mean, they could all be the same kind of cord.
Oh,
but there
sure.
was one specific mini USB cord that would connect to the phone. Other mini USB cords, nothing.
Right.
You know, all of the stuff that plugged into the cigarette lighter, all of those cords, nothing. The phone wouldn't see any of them except this one cord.
Yeah.
And when it finally started giving out.
I had a phone like that. Yeah.
Oh, it's terrible. But this one does at least hold a charge most of the day. So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
The touch screen is super sensitive.
Oh yeah,
it was funny. I reached for it. I'm sitting at the light, and I reach for the phone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And somehow I ended up typing and sending it
to who?
Well, fortunately, it was to Sonia, so I could sit there and I could say, I didn't mean to type that.
He's like,
In the context of the conversation we were having, very weird.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I didn't. What? But it was all it was. It was just my hand just brushed across the screen. Just that.
Well, that's because we're going to that minority report. Wave your hand in the air and things happen. You know, because it is, we're living in the future. I mean, think about this. You know, we're using this stuff that, I mean, for crying out loud. And yes, okay. Once again, we Jason and I go to the we're really old back portion of our day. Program, but. And we're, you know, not. And
we should set up a get off my lawn segment. We should have one just every episode and do our little Andy Rooney get
you
off my lawn
kids
segment.
And you're, you know, but it, no, I mean, literally we are, and we're not, and honestly we're not that old. I mean, but the thing is that you
speak for yourself.
We're not that old, but we don't have to go back that far to remember when the phone was attached to the wall.
Yes.
And old enough to remember when you could kill a person with a phone.
Yes.
Because
they were big heavy.
And they were heavy. And my friend, our Chris Downs, a filmmaker friend of ours, was actually looking probably a year and a half ago. He was looking to find like a 1970s phone, mm-hmm. because he was going to do a film where somebody hit somebody else with the phone and, right. you know, killed him with it. And it's like, he couldn't find one, because it's like, why would you have a bludgeoning phone? I mean,
I've got one actually. I've got one somewhere. It's the one. It was the desk model,
sure,
not the one on the wall, but mm-hmm. it was the desk with the cradle and stuff. And it's push button though. It's not. It's
oh
not
yeah,
the
so you need the rotary dial. Rotary.
If you're doing the 70s, you gotta have the rotary.
Yeah, you gotta have the rotary dial. The thing about the push button ones. Is and okay, here's a great piece of technology. You pull out your cell phone now and you go to your dial a number.
Yep.
If you can still remember what the number is, because of course none of us remember phone numbers anymore. They're all stored in the memory of the phone.
Right.
I remember my parents' phone number and my high school girlfriend's phone number. And everything else is, yeah, well, nobody lives in that house anymore. I'm not even sure that house is still standing. But anyway, you sit there but when the push button phones first came out, what all they were was a push button that powered the same technology as the rotary phone.
Mm-hmm.
So you would dial.
Push the button.
You push the button. And basically, it's still turning inside. So you'd be like, push, 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 push. And then you waited.
Yeah, because I had a hand unit like that. Because what it was it's recognizing the clicks
mm-hmm.
as the number. And so the technology had not transitioned over yet. To do the tone dot.
Well, and that's just actually, you know, the first hackers were hacking phone lines.
Yeah.
They were using they were basically getting free calls off, because they would figure out, because it was all tone based. It was a sound based thing. And so you sit there and was it called freaking? I think that was the early was yeah.
I don't know.
But it's just I mean if you look at what, you know, and watching someone hack a phone is a lot more realistic than what Hollywood does with the hacking stuff that you see.
I think the only time that I've ever seen anybody hack a phone in a movie was in War Games. Remember when you did that in the? But yeah. I don't think I've ever seen it anywhere else.
Well,
I know it's probably been
there.
But
we don't set much in the early. Halt and Catch Fire, that TV show, is about the only thing you're seeing really set in the early days of computers, which is kind of a shame because there was a lot of stuff going on. We all think of Apple and pick your desktop, your Windows-based desktop mm-hmm. desktop of choice. Dell.
Can you imagine a desktop computer? Unidac, maybe?
Yeah, there you go.
Nobody's going to know what that is.
Yeah, no.
Turn to the person next to you, considerably older, and ask them, what is Unidac?
You know, they... Every now and again,
Allie, do you know what a Unidac is? Okay, see,
yeah,
I made my point.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Allie, the intern engineering for us tonight, she just shook her head, doesn't know what a Unidac is.
Every now and again, they talk about remaking Colossus, the Forbin project,
mm-hmm.
Which you could do, because it's basically an AI story. I mean, you lose the impressiveness of the scale of the computer.
Well, just make it a big mega cray.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, do something like that.
But
or a super whopper.
But yeah, so it's but in fact, I think Will Smith, I think at one point there was a Will Smith version that was attached. Which actually, in terms of a film that could handle a remake, I could see them remaking that. It's lost enough of the public consciousness, and I think that
I see them remaking anything at this point.
Well, I know, but at the same time,
nothing is sacred. Nothing is beyond them.
Well, but again, we've had this discussion before. The human species has been remaking things as long as we've been telling stories. That's what we do.
I know.
It's just the format is bigger and costs more now.
I know.
Millions and millions of dollars. Speaking of which, Jurassic World. Biggest record. Opening ever.
Fastest run to 500 million, I think, is the official record that it just broke.
Wow.
And apparently Marvel sent a congratulatory message or something over to Universal.
Nice.
Yeah. So, because Avengers was the one that held it
until
Jurassic World came out.
See, that's pretty classy, actually.
Yeah.
Good points to Marvel for that. But, wow. Entertaining film.
Is it?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. The primary criticism you've probably heard is that you don't go to watch this movie for the characters. You go to watch it for the dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's pretty much the real criticism.
That's why anybody went to go see Jurassic Park, the first one. Because it's like,
dinosaurs. Yeah, but the first one had really solid characters.
Yeah.
And I think what ended up happening, we kept the cool dino stuff. In the sequels, but the characters and plot kind of diminished. But this is fun, and I could recommend this movie. I can sit there and go, it's a fun movie.
Yeah, we ran a review from Jay McDowell, who's our one of our new guys.
Right,
we're slowly easing him into doing some stuff. And he reviewed Mad Max.
Mm, okay,
not Jurassic World. We haven't got a review for Jurassic World yet.
Hmm.
Why don't you get on that?
I'll see what I can do about that.
You know.
Yes.
We are 15 or so minutes into the show.
And we're just...
we haven't talked about our topic
but
yet.
We've digressed, and that's what we do. And,
yes. And our,
it's
and
not
we
one of our shows, that
And we trust our audience to follow along with
we
us.
We do, actually. And if they have not abandoned us at this point, they know what to expect from us, actually.
Yeah, so. I suppose. Yeah. We do actually have a topic this week. It was suggested to us by
our
listening...
Our point, and we do have one.
Yeah, sometimes. Mike suggested that we talk about, because we have talked on a number of occasions about story.
Mm-hmm.
And tangentially, yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
We have also said that it's very important. One of the reasons why some stories don't work is because studios or writers or whoever don't trust their audience enough to go along with whatever it is they're trying to do. So Mike suggested we talk specifically about the importance of trusting an audience when you're coming up with a story, whether it's a TV show or a book or a movie or whatever. So, I guess that's what we'll talk about. Now, we also have had because Ray in Pennsylvania has suggested the anime story,
right.
The anime conversation. And at some point, we definitely need to get around to that.
We want to sit down and actually watch those episodes.
Yeah.
And have a chance to really, and it'd be not, we, we'd kind of like to do is actually watch them together.
I've watched some Ghost in the Shell.
Uh-huh.
I'm getting ready to start Attack on Titan because there's going to be a live action version.
Right,
of that.
I saw the trailer for that. It's...
Did you see the Final Fantasy VII is getting a remake? The video
game.
And everybody was like, "Sony just won, Sony wins."
Assuming it's good.
Well,
it's
going to
be good.
Yeah.
It looks good.
Trailer looks good.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, yeah. So a good example of a studio that did not trust their audience, John Carter.
Yeah.
I mean, we keep going back to this one, but it's such a good example of what not to do on the backside of it. I mean, from a story standpoint, the movie itself is really good.
Yeah.
Nobody knew about it.
Right.
Because the Disney people or whoever was looking at it and go, well, how do we market this thing?
Well, okay, the correct answer to that is the first words you see... Or the voice you hear, or the whether it's the text on the screen or someone saying it, is from the the story that inspired Star Wars,
Superman,
yeah,
Flash Gordon,
and just keep going because it is the core for all of these stories, and that's how you do it. as opposed to, and as much as it's a good song, it's a great Peter Gabriel song, but it's also completely the wrong song to choose to advertise this movie. They did not trust that the audience would get that this was the adaptation of the story that inspired
everything,
a significant chunk of modern pop culture. Another great example on the TV side is Firefly.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when that show first came up, instead of doing the show in the order that Whedon had designed it to be in, they give us the origin story, the train job,
which was a last minute production that had to be added to the series order,
right?
Because Fox sat there and went, "We don't get it."
Instead of letting things unfold in the way that he went to, and there are a lot of different reasons that show got canceled ultimately, but that's a pretty significant poor way to start things off, because
although the train job is a good episode,
but you don't have the when it comes to telling a story, there's an order. I mean, it's like,
because things build.
Yeah, and there's a point to when you're telling a story that comes place over several episodes, and we were still at that point where we were not getting huge narrative arcs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so you're running into this problem where if you actually are trying to tell something that even over the course of episodes has a bit of an arc to it, there's an order to it. And it's like, Sci-Fi Channel, before it was SIFI, back when it was the Sci-Fi Channel, they didn't trust their audience at all. It has taken them this long to start coming back to making science fiction again.
I don't think they've come back yet. I there's a couple of shows that are just now coming in the summer that I need to look at.
Mm-hmm.
Dark Matter is one of them,
right,
and a couple of others.
I haven't watched the first episode of Dark Matter yet.
But, I think Chris Jensen told me it looks like they're reusing some of the old Stargate Universe sets.
They probably are.
Which surprises me, because I wouldn't think that they would have kept any of that.
Well, they probably just took them up. They probably just took things apart and threw them in a warehouse and well, we paid for it.
Yeah.
But you ended up...
But you look at something what's that one? Ascension.
Oh, yeah.
Terrible, terrible story.
Yeah.
And it assumes that you're just going to go along for the ride and not think about it. But if you look at the story too hard,
do not start directly.
It completely falls apart. About a third of the way through, at the end of the first part, when he falls out of the spaceship and he lands on the tumbling mats in the big warehouse,
mm-hmm.
And you go, what? And on the surface of it, it's an interesting premise.
Right.
It's basically a bottle show.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got these people who think that they're in space, mm-hmm. and they're not. Okay, fine. But there is no way on God's green earth that you're going to convince me that these people could buy into that for 50 years without somebody figuring it out.
Well, I could see it actually being done, but needs to be written in a way that you can
for 50 years.
Well, no, you can still do it, because if you're on a generation ship, essentially, you're not expecting to encounter, you're not going to run into anything in theory,
right?
You know, hopefully.
One would think,
where did that planet come from? Let me just call it Titanic and go from there.
Sure.
But you can do it, but
in which case, I want Kylie Minogue to show up.
See. That would be a plus. Right. That would actually completely improve the show. But no, it becomes one of those things where you can do it if you are just, well, if you trust the audience, if you build into the story actual logic and think about these things where you look, and when it comes to telling a story, if you are trying to convince your audience that somebody believes something,
mm-hmm.
okay, You have to give them a reason to believe it. You have to give them, or a reason
and
to...
And it has to make sense inside the logic right. of the story structure.
Internal consistency has got to yes. be the key. One of the things that has been a bane on, say, the horror genre, okay, for about ever, is a general lack of internal consistency on anything.
Yeah.
I mean, you
why are they going into the cabin?
What? Why are they going into the attic? Why are they going to the basement? Why did they split up? Have they never seen a horror film before?
Why is she wearing a tank top?
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, why is she taking a shower in the middle of this, you know, the middle of this haunted house? Oh, well, we got, you know. So it's and there are certain genre tropes and quote unquote requirements of the genre, mm-hmm. okay? You're not going to watch these films for anything other than a paint by numbers, A, B, C, D, E, ta-da, we're done, right?
Right.
So when you have films come along, like, say, The Babadook, which was last year, was it last year?
Yeah, it was last year.
Where they paid attention to the story. And they paid attention to tension, and they paid attention to,
or Cabin in the Woods.
Cabin in the Woods takes
all of the tropes and
it's a very self-aware film that actually looks at things and actually follows through on its. And it as an example of a film, two films that are in those genres that are trusting the audience. And Cabin in the Woods is trusting the audience to know what we're talking about.
Right.
We expect you to get it. We're not going to sit there and explain to you. That we're basically, you know, these are the stereotypes. We're not going to, you know, you're going to know them. We expect you to recognize them.
Right.
We expect you to get the references. We're not going to sit there and go, we're clearly referencing Hellraiser here. We're clearly referencing Poltergeist. No, we're not doing that. We're just going to sit there and say, you know, here's the stuff.
Yeah.
And you're going to get it or you're not.
Speaking of stuff.
Yeah. Oh, hey.
That's a perfect way to segue. See what you did there?
I know. I'm
that
really...
was brilliant.
Thank you.
Accidentally brilliant, but brilliant. Yes.
Yeah, well, that too.
Yes, we are sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com. They are purveyors of fine licensed merchandise, and we do encourage you to check them out.
There's some really, really amazing stuff to look at over there.
Yes, and we invite you to go check them out, of course, after you're done listening to our show. But in the meantime, you can listen to a message from them. We're going to go refill our coffee mugs, and we will be back right after this. H2O continues. Stand by.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Where can you get Age of Ultron stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Justice League stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Doctor Who stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Daredevil stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
New items being added all the time. Get your superhero stuff at SuperheroStuff.com. Plus, the Hero Box is back. $70 worth of superhero stuff for only $49. SuperheroStuff.com, where heroes shop.
Hi, this is Jason Hunt, and if you're one of the dedicated listeners for this show, first of all, thank you. Second, you are sharing with others, are you not? And you should be aware by now, we have many shows as part of Sci-Fi for Me Radio, our Marvel discussion on Level 1187, the DC chat on the Rogues Gallery, Sci-Fi for Chicks talking about various topics, which we also do in mixed company on the Echo Chamber, and H2O, which is our one-on-one discussion between Mr. Harvey and myself, now syndicated over at Amazing Stories Magazine. Sci-Fi for Me Radio is more than one show, and we'd like to invite you to join us for all of it, or at least try it out and see what you think. And also check out Sci-Fi for Me TV, that's our YouTube channel, where we have interviews, convention panel video, and Week in Review, where we deliver a digest of the news of the week. All part of giving you the most bang for your buck. Oh yeah, wait, no, it's free. So check it out, Sci-Fi for Me Radio and Sci-Fi for Me TV, all part of SciFiForMe.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Sci-Fi for Me Radio, transmitting by the power of Grayskull.
Back on H2O, Jason Hunt here along with Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
And we missed a milestone.
We did.
This is episode 67.
67 of these things.
67 of these things. And We started with superhero stuff at episode 50.
Oh.
So, no, episode 15.
15, yeah.
It's been 50. The episode where we previewed, you were in New York, we
right.
previewed Sci-Fi XY,
mm-hmm.
which is going to be the new show for the summer. It's coming on June 23rd. We did that one that week, 65, was our 50th episode with superhero stuff as a sponsor. And we missed it.
Oh.
But I wasn't even thinking about it.
Yeah.
We'll have to mark when we have 100. When we do episode 115, then...
Which is not that far away now.
Not far away. Yeah, we'll talk to Micah about putting together maybe some sort of a giveaway or something.
Yeah,
when we do episode cool. 115, which will be 100 with our sponsor.
Nice.
Of course, that assumes they stick with us. We haven't put in an order in 3 months. We got to
Yeah,
back
we should do that.
Yes, add that to the list of things to catch up on. Trusting the audience.
Yeah. So I was thinking about this.
Yes.
Another example of a film that trusted the audience that the studio didn't know what to do with. And you heard of a lady named Catherine Bigelow?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Movie director.
Movie director. Pretty good at what she does, as a matter of fact.
She should be directing all the movies with female leads.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. But she's pretty good at what she does. And she made a film called Strange Days, which is a 90s movie?
Mm,
yeah, 90s movie.
Yeah.
Is
that, it's set in the 90s?
Or it was made in the 90s and set in the 90s.
Okay.
Set in 1999, right at the eve of the millennium.
Oh, yes.
And it is a science fiction film. And I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest a good chunk of our very well-educated and smart listeners may not have seen this film.
I haven't seen it.
Because it came and went, because it had a terrible marketing campaign.
Like they do.
In fact, not only was it terrible, it was loud and unpleasant. And it starred Ralph Fiennes and Angela Bassett.
Yeah, I remember that.
Incredible cast. But it's a 1940s film noir movie set in 1999.
Hmm.
And if you're watching this film and Ralph Fiennes is playing Humphrey Bogart and Angela Bassett is playing Claude Rains, it really kind of is. But the thing is that it's a neo-noir, okay?
Right.
And it had a terrible campaign. And it's because the studio couldn't figure out how to market it. Well, actually, they didn't trust the audience to get the fact that Bigelow was telling this story that was social commentary, like a lot of noir films actually were. It was a dramatic, it was an adventure story and a crime story and a love story and all these different things. And as the viewer, I'm watching the ad for this, the preview for this, and going, I hate this. It hurts my head.
Yeah, you're preconditioned to not even want to see
exactly, because you've got Rafe, you got this like real loud thing, and Rafe Fiennes giving this speech, which really has nothing to do with the movie. I mean, it's in the movie,
yeah,
but it's his sales pitch for what his character does, which has nothing to do with the overall plot. And it's like, why is this here?
Because somebody wanted to hear Ralph Fiennes speak.
Well, yeah, but you can hear Ralph Fiennes speak, but you could also sit there and give him. There's all sorts of great places in there to. And frankly, if you're gonna, it's set, I think, 5 years into the future at the time. I think I want to say it was 94, 95 that it came out, something like that. Because I was still living in Manhattan, Kansas,
okay.
So it had to be before 95.
Yeah.
But it was talking about transferring memories through technology. I think some degree of even body camera stuff, but it was stuff that was just enough in the future.
Right.
You could see the technology now, and oddly enough, you look back and go, "Well, that stuff's really dated, and that stuff hasn't happened yet." But at the time, mm-hmm. it was 5 minutes into the future.
Sure.
And they completely dropped the ball on the ad campaign, and it didn't go anywhere. And here's this really, really solid science fiction film, which, in 2015, it doesn't feel like a science fiction film as much. But it's a, neo-noir, and it's very much a 1940s Bogart movie. And then you have films like Dark City, which came out in that same little block of time where you had The Matrix, and you had Dark City, and you had 13th Floor.
Yeah. Which actually wasn't too bad.
Well, when you look at these films, you've got, and Truman Show was in that same little window. So you have a whole four different films that are all basically playing with what is reality in different ways.
Right.
And frankly, I'm going to go Dark City and Truman Show probably at the top, Matrix below, and then 13th Floor below. 13th Floor is just, it's not really meant to be deep.
It's just
a science fiction.
It's a fun flick. Yeah, that's all. I mean, a popcorn movie.
But again, they didn't know what to do with Dark City when it came to the ad. So that actually did not do the kind of box office business.
Who was in that?
I
didn't see that either.
Wow. I don't know if I can talk to you anymore. Dark City is so good.
We actually talked about this. We were recording some XY and Sonia doing her research. It was coming up on all of these different top 10 movies to watch, top 10 books. I don't know if Dark City was on any of them.
It was original script.
That's why.
Right, that's why.
Yeah.
And from the same guy who did the Riddick movies.
Okay. Yeah.
But it, basically, it's Kiefer Sutherland and William Hurt, and the British actor.
Now, why did I miss that one?
Jennifer
Connelly's a British actor?
No, just I'm just throwing a complete blank on the
internet
on the name of the main character, for crying out loud.
How dare you forget?
I know. What's wrong with me?
Do you see the news that John Hurt has been diagnosed with cancer?
No.
Yep. Although he says he's optimistic about a recovery, but yeah, diagnosed with cancer. That news came out today as we were recording.
No, I'm very sorry to hear that.
Yes. We wish him the best.
Yes, we do. Rufus Sewell.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I know the name.
And Richard O'Brien, otherwise known as Riff Raff from the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and the writer of the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Did you really?
Yeah, the Riff Raff was the writer of the original play, the musical, and the film, playing a great villain. Like
Krug great or Kurgan great? You know, we ought to, something we ought to do at some point. Talk about
Kurgan great.
Just make a list of some of the best villains in science.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that'd be great. And Ian Richardson was in it too. So one of the great British actors. It's a fantastic film. And what makes one of those things, And coming back to trust in the audience, when the director's cut came out, the first thing that Alex Proyas, the director, did was yank off the opening voiceover. Because the opening voiceover gives away the plot of the movie. And the studio made him put it there. Because they were looking at it going, we don't get it.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that the big reveal of the film is the thing that becomes the big reveal for the main character. In other words, you as the audience follow the character along until he gets answers and you get answers at the same time.
Yeah, you're the lead character is the proxy for the audience to find out what's going on.
And so when he's confused, you're confused. You're not sitting there watching the screen going, well, it's right there.
Don't go in the
Don't
room.
Go in the room. What's wrong with you? So in terms of the story, in terms of what the director and the cast and everybody these people did, the story unfolds in a way that the audience gets the information at the same time as the hero does. However, when the film was released in theaters, you have a voiceover at the beginning that tells you what's going on. And you go,
I had a book come here for review a couple of years ago. It's been a while.
Yeah.
Written by this college professor. Never written a book before. It's self-published.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's good inch thick. I mean, it's a good solid book. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got some weight to it. So I open it up and I start to read. And I get through the prologue. And the prologue in 2.5 pages tells me everything that happens in the story of this book.
Yeah.
It's the prologue.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, I don't need to read this book now. Because it just told me everything that happens.
You know what? You can go to, well, I guess you can go to Netflix now.
And it was a badly written prologue, too.
You used to be able to go to a video store, and you would pull the video off the shelf.
Turn to the older person next to you and ask, what's a video store?
Mommy, what's a Blockbuster? We don't talk about Blockbuster anymore.
If it doesn't make $500 billion, it's not a Blockbuster.
Oh, there you go.
Different
word. Well, but also equivalent. They weren't making $500 million either. So you flip it, or you flip around the back of the DVD or the VHS or the laser disc or whatever it was, and you would see the synopsis of the film. Mm-hmm. And there was a particular trend for a while there where you would sit there and read the back of the box and go, well, I don't need to watch this now.
Yeah.
Because I know exactly what happens in this film. And I'm going to put it back now and find something where maybe I might not be in it. And to be honest, you know, with a certain, again, stepping back to the horror genre, you know, if you're just going for the you know, the killer with the knife and the girl with her top off, then you know, ta-da, there you go. That's right. That's half the horror section right there. But if you're looking for something that actually had a plot and development and tension and fear, and you might be scared or something, you know, or go to a science fiction film where you might actually want to think. And you would sit there and some of these things. Okay, 2001.
Yes.
How much dialogue is in that movie?
Not a lot.
There you go. What you're watching what happens on the screen. The you know.
Yeah. Kubrick, you're finding out what's going on as they're finding out.
Right. And for a film that, and admittedly, it was a different time in filmmaking.
But audience. Still, though, I mean, that kind of film back then, still.
Oh, yeah.
Is a huge leap
and
out there that says you've got to go with
it. It confused people. It confused critics. It confused audiences. But it was one of the reasons that it has stood the test of time as being one of the seminal science fiction films is that it trusts the audience to follow along mm-hmm. on this very specific kind of journey where you're not given characters that are particularly deep.
Nor do they need to be.
Nor do they need to be.
Well, see, and you also have to remember too that you know this is in the 60s. Mm-hmm. This is the height of the American space program.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they could get away with a certain amount of shorthand because these are astronauts.
Right.
And people were used to the astronaut breed,
mm-hmm.
you know, those kind of guys that would go up in the rockets and put their lives on the line for just going out into space.
Sure.
So, you know, nowadays we don't have that.
Unfortunately.
I think it would probably be harder now. If you put 2001 out now,
mm-hmm.
you'd probably have a whole lot more people that didn't understand it because they couldn't identify with the characters the way they could back in the 60s.
Okay, I would agree with you there. I think, interestingly enough, when you come to the sequel, 2010,
mm-hmm.
It's also a film that trusts the audience, but it trusts it in a different way.
Yeah.
That's a much more character driven film. It's a much more politically driven film. It's a lot more
Hollywood film.
It's a lot more Hollywood, but at the same time, it's actually a fairly solid adaptation of the book.
Mm-hmm.
But it trusts the audience to look at the characters. it's a much more human based story.
Yeah.
But it trusts you to follow along the characters and not look at the characters as stereotypes.
And it humanizes Hal a little more.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's that too. But it was a time when that was a Cold War movie,
right?
And we were in that Cold War. There was still the time of
turn to the person next to you.
Yeah.
The Cold War could be coming back though.
Well, see,
I think we're gonna have a new one.
I don't think we are. I think it's a whole lot of hot air and bluster, and it's nowhere near the kind of tension that we saw post World War II.
You know, history, not yet.
History lesson for you kids at home: turn to the person. Actually, you know, it's this is personality stuff. This is ego and person. Yeah, I think so. And that's just, you know, I'm just looking at it going, this is not. we're not going to get to the kind of, we don't have the kind of race, whether it's arms race or space race or anything like that, the level of competition where we are going to be the dominant force isn't there. Because post-World War II, society, worldwide, there was a real question of who was going to be that.
Right.
Because at the, any real person looking at an analysis of how we won the World War II, the Russians kind of did it. We dropped the bomb.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of actually beating the Nazis,
yeah,
that was a lot more the Russians than it was Americans. I mean, D-Day, but I mean, the Russians basically threw their entire country at the Third Reich and sat there and went, we got more.
Mm-hmm.
So...
although it still rankles me that we have to rely on Russian rockets.
Oh God, yes.
I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Did you see? I think it was the folks over at IO9 published the pictures of the mothballed Soviet shuttle program.
No, I didn't see that.
Wow, I was looking at those photos, going, oh, that's just. And one of them looks like you could still just go get it, and fix the tiles.
The fourth, how many we still have? Three?
Yeah, something like that.
I mean, they'd still fly.
I know, it's just so frustrating.
Crazy.
But it's just again, 2010, it was a different time. We were 2001, it was the space race. Mm-hmm. We still had that. We had that, we're going to go out there. And so you could believe in 2001, we were going to be building the kind of ship that could get us to Jupiter.
Yeah.
And they trusted the science. There's no... You know, the human technology in that film was realistic in the context of we've come this far, so we're going to come this far.
Right.
Now, there's some obvious things like video phones that just are like, you know, it's like, wow, that's an incredibly clunky, large object you have there. but in terms of the space technology, it made sense. And 2010, the same thing. But these are films that did trust their audience. They trusted you. They trusted you to be in a certain place that you've got it. So when it comes time for Keir DeLay to show up in 2010 and start being cryptic, there's not like subtitles going, and what he really means is this.
Yep.
And they expected you to watch. If you watched 2010, they expected you to watch 2001.
Yeah, so you know what's going on.
Yeah, they're not going to sit there and go, and then this happened, right. And then this happened.
It's a sequel. Well, another one that trusts the audience is Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is a lived-in universe. We're not going to spell everything out. We're just going to go. And you're going to go along for the ride, and we'll see you at the end.
And in all fairness to Star Wars, that was a ballsy move at the time because nobody thought it was going to work.
Right. Well, yeah, because nobody does science fiction anymore.
Well, not like that. Example.
Well, the 20th Century Fox board, they all looked at it and thought, this is going to tank.
Yeah.
We have absolutely no idea what to do with this.
Well, because it didn't fit in the box that people had come to expect.
Right.
And some of these films that really broke new ground did it because they did trust their audience. Or they trusted the fact that the audience was going to somehow get what they were trying to do. They were going to take that leap in a film that wasn't fitting in the boxes. Jaws. How long did it take you to see the shark?
Long time.
You saw what happened. You saw a fin. You saw the fin.
Yep.
Or you saw the results, and they set that up in that first couple of minutes.
Well, that very first scene.
Exactly.
She's out there and she's in the water, and all of a sudden she gets yanked down.
And I tell you what, I still get that twist in my stomach because that is one of the most disturbing, because every time she pops back up and it's the noises she's making, it's just like, I am 45 years old and that still hits me. And I sit there and go, that's just wrong. I mean, because it sounds terrible.
I think I saw an interview with her one time. I read an interview that... you've got a diver underneath that's yanking her down.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew that something was going to happen, but apparently she didn't know when.
Right.
And that whole thing was completely, I could be remembering this wrong. It's been known to happen. So don't send us a bunch of hate emails. You got it wrong. But I think she almost panicked and drowned.
I think I remember reading something about her actually being scared. I'm not sure if I remember anything about her almost drowning.
She ended up not going in the water for a while because of that experience. Yeah. And I mean,
I would too. But the thing is that
traumatizing.
Spielberg at that point is trusting us to get that there's this thing out there.
Of course, we all know that the truth is the shark didn't work.
Well,
the only reason why we didn't see the shark is because the shark didn't work.
But at the same time,
that actually calls for an even greater level of trust in the audience. Was we can't show you the shark.
Right.
You just got to assume it's a shark.
And we're gonna do everything in our power to make you uneasy so that when we do get the shots that did work, you sit there and go, ah!
Yeah.
You know, so, but, okay, Blade Runner. All right. I think you cannot argue that Blade Runner is not one of the most best loved.
Yeah.
I mean, the film is gorgeous and it's playing with big themes of what does it mean to be human? Mm. And as far as Philip K. Dick adaptations, it's iffy, but it's most Philip K. Dick adaptations.
Compare Blade Runner. When you look at it as a Finding God story, compare Blade Runner to Star Trek V. They're both Finding God stories.
Oh, well, yeah.
One works a whole lot better than the other.
Oh, sure.
One.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. There's a Star Trek film that doesn't trust its audience either.
Just one?
Yeah. Well, there's one in particular that I'm thinking of. The last Next Generation one.
Oh, yeah. Nemesis?
Yeah. Doesn't trust its audience.
The two JJ tracks don't either.
Well, and we'll talk about those in a minute because there's some stuff to talk about that in terms of trust too. But the
Blade Runner,
the voiceover that everyone hated, including the actor Harrison Ford, when the main character in your film is like, seriously, we got to do it. Fine, let's go upstairs and record it. You know, it's he sounds bored.
Did you see...
Now, let me also say, it's one of the best voiceovers since film noir films, because voiceovers are hard. Yeah.
Did you see the 45-minute cut with all the alternate takes and the deleted scenes?
You know what? I haven't watched that.
It's traveling around the internet. It's very interesting. And there's some stuff in there I thought, that could have stayed in. But I can see why they cut it for pacing and that kind of thing. But there are a couple of two, three different scenes in the hospital that he's got with the Blade Runner officer who replaced him. Mm-hmm. That's doing the interview with Leon.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And gets
white cap test.
Yeah. He actually shows up in a couple of hospital scenes and they have a dialogue. He has dialogue with Deckard in that. And I thought those work okay.
Well, but we also know how many stuff gets cut for time. You sit there and go, okay, we've hit the point where, you know, and
and we know how well that worked for Avengers too.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, okay.
See, that's another one where the studio doesn't trust the audience as much as the director does.
Well,
the studio says, we have an agenda. You've got this piece and this piece and this piece that are all interlocking with all of the rest of these stories that has to be in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Or Spider-Man 3.
Right.
You know, when the producers come into Sam Raimi.
Or Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yeah. You got to have this villain. You got to have this villain. Wait a minute. There's too many in here. Mm-hmm. People are not going to want this.
Sure.
Nope. You got to have it. Because everybody on the internet was clamoring for Venom.
Well, and we also have to sell more action figures.
Yeah. Batman and Robin.
Which, sadly, we can blame George Lucas for.
Speaking of the licensing expo, we were talking about Star Trek. Did you, we posted, there was a photograph that got posted over a Collider. And they posted a lot of photos from licensing expo. We need to go to the licensing expo.
Yeah, we do.
The CBS Consumer Products display.
Mm-hmm.
Here's all the CBS stuff. Here's all the Star Trek stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hanging right there in the middle of everything, big as life. Is the USS Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
NCC-1701A.
Mm-hmm.
The one from the movies.
Mm-hmm.
The refit Constitution.
Right.
Kirk's ship.
Mm-hmm.
From the original films.
Sure.
It's not the JJ Prize. It's the Enterprise from the original. Take that. I mean, that's... Yeah,
we'll see.
Okay.
Okay, well, here...
Because if you're going to do that, mm-hmm. you're going to do this really big, huge display.
Right.
You know, we're coming up on 50 years.
Yeah.
Then why don't you have the current model? or the original model?
Excuse me. Well, okay, there's...
But they've got Enterprise A hanging up there. I mean, it's a huge model.
Yeah.
I'm thinking... That's not the Budweiser prize. That's not the Apple Bridge prize.
See,
that's
I don't have
the real one.
I don't have a problem with the Apple Bridge. I
hate it.
Well, I don't. It's
well, I hate the whole movie.
Of all the things I could be angry about, the Apple Bridge is not one of them, because the Apple Bridge looks like a lens flare laden. Updated version of the movie bridge, anyway, as opposed to the original series bridge. Because what here's the
only bridge that it comes close to is the Enterprise A at the end of Star Trek IV, because it was all white.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember?
Uh huh.
Other than that, that bridge has never been white.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Okay. The when it comes to when aside from the giant beer. Brewing containers of engineering.
Yes,
I did not mind the production design. I did. It's an update. Okay, just like the when they updated it from the TV show to the first set of movies.
Right.
Because if you go back and look at the production art when they were talking about doing
phase two,
and the redesigns of some of that stuff, you're going, well, clearly this is made in the 70s. Because you've got that 70s aesthetic, which I would have hated.
Yeah.
Because there's a whole lot of 70s design that I just think looks ugly as hell. But, so
well,
I
well, the pajama uniforms would have been part of that.
Yeah, they would have been. And they were. So I don't mind the production design changes. Okay. I don't mind the Enterprise because I got my saucer, I got my nacelles, I got my engineering hull. That's all I care about, because if you change that, it's not the Enterprise anymore.
Right.
So that's fine. Mm. I don't mind the bridge. I like the fact that they kept the uniforms a lot like the original series. Okay, cool. Good for that. Yay. Okay. The biggest problem with those films, and in fairness to J.J. Abrams, who has done some really cool shows and some good movies, he's the Star Wars guy,
mm-hmm.
and the studio hired the Star Wars guy.
To make Star Trek.
So, and the studio got what they asked for. He gave them what they wanted.
Yeah.
Now, for fans of Star Trek, it may not have been what they wanted. Hugely popular films. Even the second one, which
Rock'em Sock'em Roller Coaster Ride.
Sure.
But that's all they are. They have no depth to them.
And that's why we're looking at fairly positive, fingers crossed, kind of positive thoughts that we've got a different writing team on the third one, and they're talking about it being exploration.
Yeah, cautiously optimistic because of Justin Lin's comments about growing up with his family in Anaheim and seeing Star Trek all the time at night and whatever. I am not optimistic about what Simon Pegg has said, because he's basically sitting there saying the studio wants it less like Star Trek.
Well, but he also clarified that in saying that it was the goal was not to make it slavishly. You know, this is a Star Trek movie. It's like, tell a good story.
Like all the Easter eggs, too many Easter eggs.
Yeah, well, I think you run into...
Because Into Darkness was one big Easter egg.
Well, and the here's where
they laid an egg.
There's two things. There's two big problems with Star Trek Into Darkness. The first...
Just two?
Honestly, just two.
Star Trek, Into Darkness.
Everything flows out of these two problems.
Right.
Okay. The first problem is they shoehorn... They have two stories going on. We have the story of the Starfleet admiral who's looking at the Klingon Empire in the distance and saying, "There's going to be a war. I have to plan to win it."
Right.
That should have been your story. Mm-hmm. That should have been the whole thing, because you already have your villain. You have a young captain, a young crew. You have the conflict of the fact that he's not Jim Kirk yet. He's just the new captain of the Enterprise. He doesn't have the clout. He doesn't have the authority. He's just a captain. and he's got an admiral out there. This could have been a really interesting political Star Trek political thriller with, you know.
Because Kirk was a captain who was 2 days ago a cadet.
Right.
Dumb.
Well, yeah, that too. And that could that should have been your whole film. That should have been your
No reason at all to introduce Khan into the mix.
Well, yeah, and that's the other problem is that you basically took for fan service reasons and poor fan service reasons because the fans weren't asking for it. You shoehorn Khan into this,
and it's the wrong Khan.
And it is the comic books. I understand that the comic books gave an explanation as to how we went from Khan Noonien Singh to who is clearly East Indian. To someone who is clearly not. And you know what? If Ricardo Montalban had never played the part, if it had been played by a white guy in the 60s, and Benedict Cumberbatch had come back and it would be one thing. Mm. But there's a point to having, I mean, there's a backstory and you establish this stuff and you don't.
Well, I mean, you also get the fact that Khan is a Sikh warrior.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a very specific thing.
Yeah.
Not everybody gets into that club.
No. And it's, you end up with this stuff that's changed for the sake of change.
Well, it's because Benedict Cumberbatch was the flavor of the month.
Well, he's still the flavor of the month and he's still going to be awesome. And quite frankly, given what he has to work with, he's a great villain.
Well, sure.
If there had never been the Khan of the TV show, you would look at this film and go, right. So, how did our heroes win? Because he's, hand wave him.
Yes, hand wave him and red matter.
Well, and that's just and you get to those two things because you get to things like. Red matter and a supernova that threatened the galaxy, where all of a sudden the science goes out the window.
Right. And the super transporter and all of that other stuff. Like,
and
really?
And honestly, the thing is that when it comes to something like Star Trek or Star Wars, and we've got Star Wars movies coming out that we are all excited about, and we were terrified until we saw that first trailer, the real trailer. We sit there and goes,
please don't suck.
Because we know, but the thing is, we know JJ's a fan. But the thing is because you're a fan of something doesn't mean you can pull it off. But,
well, and I think too, the other thing, I think one of the things that's going to make the JJ Wars work is the fact that you've got Kathleen Kennedy sitting there riding herd over him. And you're not going to have another situation like George Lucas, who didn't have anybody to tell him no for the prequels.
Right.
I think you're going to have a structured limitation. And I think that's what makes the first trilogy work so well, is that they were doing what they could with what they had, as opposed to George Lucas just throwing a bunch of money out and just doing whatever he wants.
Well, I think that when it's your toy, it's okay for you to break it. That doesn't make it right.
Yeah.
But as every parent will tell you, if you have a child who breaks the toy and they do it out of, you know, spite, and they come to you with a broken toy, it's like, well, you broke it. That's the prequels,
yes.
To be perfectly honest, that's J.J. Abrams is coming in as a fan who loves that universe. He's probably terrified of breaking it, and he's got the people around him to help make sure that he doesn't. And quite frankly, if I was him and I'm sitting there working with Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill, my first day of rehearsals with them is going to be going, I don't even want to talk. I'm terrified of you people.
I can't tell them what to do.
Exactly. How do I get to tell them what to do? This isn't right. I need to go home. I need my mom. It's like, you know, you're overwhelmed. So
my mom wouldn't get it.
No. But the thing is that you have these films that work. They work because they make the money. They're popular. People enjoy them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still a question of when you come in building you have a giant fan base. When you've got your Star Trek fans or your Star Wars fans.
An extremely knowledgeable fan base at
that. You've got to trust them.
Yeah.
And I think for studios, those kind of shows, those kind of movies come with a baggage that a lot of other things don't. Star Wars and Star Trek have a multi-generational appeal Mm-hmm. And they changed things. They ended up being important in a way that the time tunnel was never important, or
Fantastic Voyage,
or
Attack of the 50-Foot Woman, or what was it? Attack of the 40-Foot,
something like that, or the Man with the X-ray Eyes, or the Blob. These were big films. Mm. They made a lot of money, but they didn't have that kind of impact. You didn't have Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea?
Yeah.
Or Space 1999. As much as I keep saying, you could reboot that show.
They're still talking about it.
Or you don't have that kind of stuff where the cultural impact. You weren't doing. Other science fiction TV shows weren't doing, and Star Trek the original series trusted their audience too, to a large part. We're making social commentary. We've dressed it up as a science fiction show, but Let This Be Your Last Battlefield is a little on the nose, or The Omega Glory is a little on the nose.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, hey, we've got the first interracial kiss. What are we doing here? We're going, we're doing something important. There's that kind of stuff ends up lasting. And consequently having a giant audience that is looking at your reboot and saying, are we sure we want to build the Enterprise in a gravity well?
Mm.
Okay, well, if you want to do that, fine. That's fine. Okay, great. Whatever.
In Iowa.
Time travel. Okay, well, sure. Star Trek's got a history of time travel. Okay. Red matter.
Sure, that works.
So you've got the MacGuffin machine.
Yeah.
And a supernova that threatens a galaxy. Okay, forget it. You guys are just going off the rails here.
Yep. So, and before we go off the rails, we are going to head out because we're well past our time limit.
Never happened before, ever in the history of recording have we ever gone over.
I do think this is a rule.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. All right, that's going to do it for us. If you have a comment or a suggestion for a topic that we can discuss, you can leave that.
I think we'll probably come back to this because we haven't even scratched the surface on a lot of this stuff.
No, this will be part one.
Yeah.
All right, you can leave us a comment. You can send us an email, h2o@scififorme.com. You can find us on social media, which is, I kept screwing this up over the weekend, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Google+, YouTube, Tumblr.
Mm-hmm.
I got them all.
There you go.
Yeah, I kept forgetting YouTube.
Yeah.
On some of the stuff that we recorded over the weekend. So, that's that. And if you know someone who would be interested in listening to our shows, feel free to pass along the link.
By all means.
Share with your friends, because your mother taught you to share. And that's going to do it for us. I want to thank our engineer, Ali Ulrich.
Thank
the
you.
The intern. And Tim Harvey.
Thank you, sir.
And I'm Jason Hunt. We're going to go refill copy mugs and probably keep talking. But you won't hear it. Until next week when we return for another H2O. Bye.
This has been a presentation of scififorme.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.